This is Virginia Insight. I'm Tom Graham. Most people listening right now probably don't give much thought on a daily basis to what it means to be an American. Perhaps when you're born into something, it's easier to take for granted. For others, they do find themselves marveling every day about their good fortune.
To have freedom, to have rights, and equality between the people.
As detailed in a recent six-part series on WMRA, the route to becoming a naturalized U.S. citizen is far from easy. But the stories of those who've made it can be awe-inspiring. So we're going to spend a bit more time with those stories this hour. Our guests include the journalist who created the series, plus two people working to help aspiring citizens, one of them a former refugee himself. And if you've got thoughts on citizenship, you'll be welcome to join the conversation too, right after the news. Great to be with you. I'm Tom Graham, and this is Virginia Insight. Becoming American is our focus this hour, following up a six-part series on that topic from the WMRA News Department that's been airing on Morning Edition here over the past several weeks. And we will invite your participation a bit later this hour, but some setup is required. Well, first, let me welcome our in-studio guests. An immigrant and naturalized U.S. citizen himself, Victor Sokoluk, now serves as Director of Virginia Immigration Services for the Church World Service Immigration and Refugee Program. Also with us, Elizabeth Gervin, Executive Director of the nonprofit agency known as Skyline Literacy, plus freelance journalist Andrew Jenner. Thank you all for making time for us.
Thanks for having us in. Mm-hmm. I'm excited to be here to talk about the series.
Yeah, it's a real privilege, Tom. Thank you so much for having us.
It is great to be here. And first of all, I want to thank you, Tom, and WMRA for giving me an opportunity to be here. And also I want to thank American people and the people of the Shenandoah Valley and entire Virginia for giving me the chance to be here and for giving me an opportunity to have a place to call home. So thanks so much.
Well, Victor, I'm sure that we will want to know much more about all of what you just said, but let me go first to noting that Andrew was the creator and principal investigator for that news series that we are focused on this hour. And Andrew, I believe that you spent more than 100 hours of research and reporting on your part with each installment of what ended up on the air running a little bit more than 4 minutes in length. So that's almost a half hour of broadcast time. And there was so much rich detail in it that it's difficult to pick selections. But we do have one to start with. I want to play for our listeners a portion of the second installment of your series. This clip runs a bit more than 2 minutes. And then I'm going to ask you and our other guests to respond. So here it is, the first half of part two of Becoming American.
Refugees make up a relatively small part of the immigrant population in the area, but they help make it an incredibly diverse one. Nakai Nongbutangbao arrived here in 2010, having fled her home in Myanmar or Burma several years earlier.
I left Myanmar to Thailand, and I stayed in Thailand about 7 months, and then I went to Malaysia. I lived in Malaysia almost 3 years.
A person can only come to the United States as a refugee through a very specific set of circumstances.
So it's usually people who have had to flee their homes because of war and violence in their home. They're living in a refugee camp in a second country, right, and they cannot return.
Jim Hirschberger is program coordinator for Harrisonburg's Refugee Resettlement Office, run by Church World Service.
You have to register with the United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees in the various centers around the world. Then on that basis, the UN refers you to the countries, U.S., Canada, Australia, and so forth. There are about 12 of them in the world. Who will resettle refugees?
After a long screening process, refugees are usually sent to communities where they'll find others who share their language and culture. More than 1,700 have been resettled in Harrisonburg and Rockingham County over the past decade, primarily from Iraq, Eritrea, Cuba, and the former Soviet Union. With state and federal funding, Church World Service assists with the initial nuts and bolts of this transition, finding housing and employment, enrolling children in school, and other things. Another local organization, New Bridges Immigrant Resource Center, has a more open-ended mission to serve as a resource for all immigrants, says Executive Director Alicia Horst.
For different people, cultural adjustment will hit at different levels. For a person who's a professional, it might be the fact that you can no longer work in your field, and therefore your identity is definitely challenged.
In Myanmar, Nakai was an X-ray technician. Now she works in food services at James Madison University. Horst says that regardless of how or why a refugee came, they face some common challenges.
One would be that people have experienced a lot related to potentially witnessing or experiencing violence. So their sense of security and safety has certainly been shaped by that. And also the sense of having to relocate and the timing often being outside of their control.
First, I came in America. I feel very lonely. I always cry at home. I don't have a friend.
5 years later, she's adjusting and thinking about her long-term future here.
Now, I feel very happy right now. I love this country, so I want to be a citizen.
This fall, she plans to apply for citizenship, something that refugees have particular incentive to do because many simply can never return home.
From the WMRA News Department series, Becoming American, created and narrated by journalist Andrew Jenner. And Andrew, you started working on this series early in August of this year. I think the segment that we just heard a portion of aired sometime in the middle of September. I'm curious, listening back all these weeks later, what's your reaction as you were hearing those voices?
Well, one thing that I was thinking about when I was hearing that clip was, although this was episode two, Nakai was actually the first person that I interviewed for the series. The logistics just worked out that way. And I could hear she had her daughter with her. I think she's about 4 years old. She was born here in Harrisonburg after they arrived. If you were listening very carefully, you could hear a little bit of shuffling around in the background there. Her daughter was coloring, and there I can just remember her kind of picking through her crayons, and it was very cute. I was also a little bit nervous that it was going to interfere with the sound of the audio quality. That was actually, I think, my very first radio interview I have ever done in my life, because radio is a new thing for me. So it was fun to think back on that interview. That was probably in mid-August that I did that at the offices of Skyline Literacy, where I did quite a few of these interviews.
Well, let me take the opportunity to thank Andrew and WMRA for showcasing our learners and having that series on the air. All of those were Skyline Literacy students who were studying for citizenship. And, you know, we were so really happy to be able to help Nakai. She would meet at the Skyline Literacy office with a tutor because the class schedule just didn't work for her. We have citizenship classes, and sometimes we'll find folks who that just doesn't work for them and their work hours, and they have a little child in tow. So every Wednesday afternoon, Nakai and her little girl would come to the Skyline office and meet with the tutor and study the citizenship material, and just saw them last evening, in fact, and they were working together, and she's moving closer and closer to submitting her application. So we're really proud of all of them.
And one of the great things that you are doing with your volunteers, that you allow children to come to the class. Mm-hmm. The reason why the children, when they grow up, they need to understand, they learn to appreciate of their parents' struggles, how much their parents have done in order for these children to be here happy and safe in the United States. These children who were born here, they need to remember that it's an honor to be a United States citizen. It's not a given. It's not entitlement to be a United States citizen. This is something that somebody had to earn. Somebody had to sacrifice something in order to become a United States citizen. And for me personally, as you can tell by my accent, I did not grow up here in the Shenandoah Valley. My kids, they do remember that their dad, he came to the United States not speaking even a word of English. And they respect and they appreciate the value of the life that they have now. And I'm sure and I hope that they will be able to tell their kids where their ancestors came from. And that's where the America is strong, that we know who we are. We remember who we are. We remember where we came from. And compared to where we are right now, we need to be grateful every moment, every second for all that we have, for all that we have in this country.
Viktor Sokolok, you grew up in Ukraine at a time when it was part of the Soviet Union, a communist part of the world at that point. And as I understand, you and your entire family were the subject of fairly severe persecution because of your religious beliefs.
That's correct, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And you ended up gaining refugee status. Tell us a little bit about how you ended up in the U.S.
Well, how I ended up in the U.S., it's a long journey. I did not even know that I will end up in the United States. I applied for exit visa just to leave the Soviet Union at that time. It was October 8th of 1989 when I left from Ukraine. I had to surrender my passport to the Soviet government. They took my citizenship. They took my passport. I left Ukraine only with a piece of paper with my picture on it and stamp exit visa. Means that there is no way back for me to return. I went to Czechoslovakia. From Czechoslovakia, I went to Austria. In Austria, I registered with the United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees, and that's where they interviewed me, and my claim was approved, and the case was referred to the Caritas. And then once we were interviewed again, and all the dots were connected, then I was sent to Italy. And after a while, after living in Italy for a month, I think, I finally had interview with United States Counselor's Office. And that's when I learned that I will go to the United States. I was told that...
Once you were granted refugee status by this UN commission, you knew that there were one of a handful of countries that you might be sent to.
Right. I knew that I could end up in the United States, Australia, Canada, or Israel. So these were our more potential places where I could end up. However, like I said, I had no idea where I would eventually end up. Whichever country would accept my case, whichever country was willing to give me the opportunity and chance, that's how I would go, because pretty much I had no choice.
So you came to the United States sometime in 1990?
I came to the United States February 21st, 1990, yes. 3:20 afternoon, aeroplane landed in JFK from Italy.
And you were sponsored by a church in upstate New York.
So that's
you
correct.
Settled first in Albany, New York?
Yeah, we were welcomed by Pine View Community Church in Albany, New York, and people
and
from...
And not speaking a word of English.
I spoke German, I spoke Italian, I spoke Polish and a couple other, but not German.
This was almost a quarter century ago. Do you remember what you felt like that first day, those first few weeks, those first months?
Well, yeah, who can forget? It was a scary moment. At the time when I landed on the U.S. Territory, like I said, I did not know even how the English language sounds. So the only thing I realized from first attempts to communicate with American people, I realized that German is not going to help me here. Italian might help some places. So the only thing I faced in front of me right away is the huge wall of obstacles. And I was like, how in the world am I going to overcome all that? But like I said, I had no other choice. So I had to either climb the wall or... So yeah, it was a scary moment. It was a scary moment.
Our guests, Elizabeth Gervin from Skyline Literacy, Viktor Sokolok from the Church World Service Immigration and Refugee Program, as well as freelance journalist Andrew Jenner. We're following up on the 6-part series that Mr. Jenner created that's been airing here on WMRA called Becoming American, all about becoming a U.S. citizen and looking perhaps in a deeper way at what it means to be a U.S. citizen. We have a couple more clips that we're going to play during the course of the hour from Andrew's series, but we're also going to invite your participation. We'll be giving out the phone number during the break and continuing this conversation in just a bit more than 1 minute.
The stripes represent the original colony. It was 13. And 50 states, 50 stars represent the states. Yeah.
On this Monday morning, Lul Johannes and his classmates are working their way through the first chapters of their citizenship textbook.
What do we show loyalty to when we say the Pledge of Allegiance?
The United States or the flag.
Very good. Okay, excellent.
Now I'm learning American history. I'm studying English and writing and reading.
More than a decade ago, Johannes fled war and instability in Eritrea. He spent years in a refugee camp in Ethiopia before being resettled in Utah with his young family. Things were nice there, but with a minimum wage job, he just couldn't get ahead. On the advice of a friend, the family came to Harrisonburg 3 years ago, where Johannes and his wife found better work in the poultry industry.
Now, completely, I make everything myself. I pay electric, I pay rent house, I pay my insurance. My life's very nice now, so I love Harrisonburg.
He loves it so much that he wants to stay forever, which is why he's in citizenship class. Mary Helen Purcell is one of its two volunteer teachers.
Their enthusiasm and their excitement about learning is what really keeps us going. We've had occasion where somebody had gone up to take the test, and they would call us on the way back. I passed. Yeah. They're so excited. I had one guy run me down in a bank parking lot. Miss Mary, I passed. Yeah.
She's referring to the 10-question civics and history test that applicants for U.S. citizenship have to pass.
From part three of the WMRA news series, Becoming American, as reported by journalist Andrew Jenner, if you've got thoughts on that or anything else we've been discussing, you can reach us by phone at 888-WMRA-TALK. In all numbers, that's 888-967-2825. I got to ask you, Andrew, how surprised were you when you looked at what potential citizens had to learn in order to be prepared for that test you mentioned?
It's hard that there's a lot of questions, and some of them are quite easy, and some of them are very difficult. I would not have been able to answer all of them for sure. And so they really have to do some pretty good studying, get very familiar with history, civics, our form of government. They're wide ranging, and they go from sort of the before the establishment of the United States, right up to today. So yeah, it was surprising.
And often in our tutor training, in that clip, Mary Helen Purcell is a Skyline Literacy Citizenship tutor. So I always smile when I hear the enthusiasm in the voice of not just the learner but also our tutor. But in our tutor training, it's interesting to see the surprise on the faces of some of the tutors who have not seen those questions and think to them themselves, maybe even scratch their heads. I wonder what the answer is to that. And then you think about the people that we are working with, our immigrants and our refugees who are preparing for this test, who don't have the context, they don't have the background. If somebody says the name Abraham Lincoln, we can instantaneously know who that is. But we work with people who have never heard of Abraham Lincoln.
Yeah, so, I think that would be one thing that would be really difficult, because a lot of these questions, I think my experience would be kind of groping for something that I knew that mm-hmm. I had come across mm-hmm. in high school. Like if they talk right. about the Federalist Papers is one that is in the more difficult category, I think, and who wrote that. And I know if I was just asked that question out on the street, I would kind of have this feeling I maybe should know this. But, whatever's analogous to the Federalist Papers in China or in some other country where I have no real understanding of their history or government structure, that would be that much more difficult, I think. Victor, did you have any experience of difficulty trying to memorize all these questions in preparation for your test?
Some of the questions you had to memorize because you don't understand exactly the structure of the government or American system. So, yeah, some of the questions pretty much You have
well,
to
Victor,
memorize.
You were nice enough to bring me a sheet here that has it's 100 questions you have to be prepared to answer.
It is. You have to be prepared to answer 100 questions. And however, the immigration officer or adjudicator will ask you, will have 10 questions. And once you answer...
And you have no idea which 10 out of the 100,
have no
so you
idea.
Have to know all of them.
That's correct.
Okay, so here are some of the ones that... I'll just page through this at random. How many amendments does the U.S. Constitution have? Name your U.S. representative. We elect a president for how many years? What is the name of the vice president of the United States now? What is the name of the Speaker of the House of Representatives? What are two cabinet-level positions? What is one promise you make to become a U.S. citizen? Victor, that last one you probably know.
Well, yeah. That's one of the last, the promise to become a U.S. citizen is to be, I would say in words, be faithful and loyal to the American government, to respect Constitution and people of the United States, and to be a person of good moral character. Because good moral character is one of the aspects that you have to prove in order to be eligible to apply for citizenship.
What does that mean, be a person of good moral character?
Be a person of good moral character means that I should not have any kind of convictions or charges in my history, in my background. I should pay all my taxes on time. And I should have employment and live in a way that I should support myself and my family and not to depend on American society, and to be a good behavior, person of good behavior and a full contributor to the American economy.
To you who are listening, who was the first in your family to become a U.S. citizen? Was it so far back in your ancestry that you don't even know? Or might there have been a grandparent, a parent, or even yourself? If you've got a personal story to share or a family one, 888-WMRA-TALK is how to reach us by phone. That's 888-967-2825. On Facebook, we are listed as WMRA's Virginia Insight, and if you prefer, you can post a question or comment there. Our guests, Elizabeth Gervin from Skyline Literacy, Victor Sokoluk from the Church World Service Immigration and Refugee Program, as well as freelance journalist Andrew Jenner. This is Virginia Insight. I'm Tom Graham. Andrew, you mentioned earlier that this was your first take at doing radio, but you've been a journalist for a good long while, working for daily newspapers and then working freelance in print for a number of national publications.
Yeah, that's right. I've been doing it since 2006, I guess a little more than 8 years now.
This was a different type of story for you to be covering, not just in medium, in topic, wasn't it?
I haven't done a lot in this area. I tend to write a lot about agriculture and environmental topics. So this was a little bit different, although my first newspaper job was for a very small weekly newspaper. I was there for 2 years and a very small staff. One of the wonderful things about that start to a journalism career is that you pretty much do everything, every beat, from crime to anything but sports. I did everything but sports. So I actually have written about citizenship once before for another community paper, just kind of as a feature story. But yeah, this wouldn't be a beat that I have spent a lot of time on in the past.
What did you feel? What did you find yourself thinking as you were talking to people who were trying to become U.S. citizens?
I was going to say the last citizenship question that you read and that Victor answered for us about what's a promise that you make or a commitment. I can't even remember the exact wording. That was a very interesting one to me because that's actually not one of these ones that I would have had in high school government class. That's not sort of a fact that comes up as you're learning American history or government for people like myself who are born as citizens, because we don't have to make any promise to become citizens. We just are, and that's not something we have to ever think about. We don't even have to be of good moral character. We can, you know, we're just in. And that was something that came up time and again for me, sort of not necessarily in the reporting, but in my mind as I was listening to the interviews, writing the stories, and just reflecting on what I was, the material. It had to do with this thing that's somewhat cliche, but very true, is that if you don't think about what your citizenship means, it's very easy to take it for granted. And all the people that I've interviewed in this series who either have just become citizens or aspire to be that, they take it very seriously. They do not take it for granted. And it was an encouragement to me to do the same, to spend more time thinking about why this is a thing to be proud of.
We have some more audio here from one of the people that Andrew interviewed, Mary Helen Purcell. Some of this, I think, made it onto the air, and some of it didn't. So I just want to play about a minute's worth of what Mary Helen had to say about how she views the work she's doing with potential citizens.
One thing I think I came out with is that no matter your culture, no matter your country, no matter how you were raised, no matter the circumstances, basically everybody's the same. They care about their family, they care about freedom, and they care about having a good life, a better life. And they are all like that, and they're all striving for that. And they're a source of great inspiration to me, all of them. I love them all. We get very close to our students, and you think, come on, you can do it, you know. And I think that helps too. They know that we're behind them and we're going to be there and we're going to help them. And I just think it enriches a person's life, both the one who's receiving it and the one who is giving it.
A couple of things strike me about that, but I'm curious, Elizabeth Gervin, executive director of Skyline Literacy, what struck you about what Mary Helen was saying?
Well, I think the motivation for our students, obviously it's an important process for them. They want to become citizens. They talk about having the right to vote, how it impacts their family, as Victor said. But the word that comes up time and time again with the people that we work with is the fact that it's a privilege. And that's what I think about as well. Then I think that's something that we as Americans don't use that word very often, the fact that this is such a privilege to be an American citizen and to be able to have the rights that we do. And I remember this one gentleman that we worked with a few years ago. He really struggled with the English, and he had a hard time passing the interview. But he finally was able to get that done. He passed his test, and I remember meeting him. He was taking another English class, and he was so excited, so happy, sharing his good news with me about passing the test. And he reached into his pocket, and he pulled out like a plastic bag, and I was really wondering what he was getting. And it had his U.S. passport in it. He had just gotten it. And he held that document as if it was just a precious piece of paper, because for him, just the privilege of being an American citizen and being able to travel the world with a U.S. passport, he said, was priceless. And so that really impacted me.
And also I'd like to contribute to that statement too. When adult person makes commitment and says words that I pledge allegiance, it's different than what Andrew said that you were born in. When I studied the Pledge of Allegiance, I gave deep thoughts to every word wherever I was reading. I thought very hardly, and I was trying to reflect on every word that I would say when I would raise my hand. And that's what it means a lot. When you are adult and you are making conscious commitment, when you are saying, I do, that's something that you cannot change back. You said, I do, once in your life.
Well,
Victor Sokolov, one of the things that Mary Helen, we heard her say in that clip a few moments ago, no matter your culture, no matter your country, no matter how you were raised, no matter the circumstances, basically everybody's the same.
That's correct. And that's why America is strong. That's why America is who America is, because it's been built on a legacy. It's been built on a legacy of welcoming strangers, welcoming those who are in a struggle for freedom, welcoming those who are seeking for the opportunity for themselves and for their children. And America has always been a beacon of hope for the world and for the people who are oppressed. And that's something that American people should be proud of. American people should be grateful that they have that kind of opportunity. And again, that's what makes us strong.
Author of the 6-part radio news series, Becoming American, journalist Andrew Jenner is one of our guests. Sitting across from him, the executive director of a Valley nonprofit that started out helping adults who had trouble with reading skills, expanded into other areas of adult education, and today also helps immigrants prepare to become U.S. citizens. Her name, Elizabeth Gervin, her nonprofit, Skyline Literacy. And next to Elizabeth, the man we were just hearing from, director of Virginia Immigration Services for Church World Service, Victor Sokolok. My name, by the way, is Tom Graham. This is Virginia Insight. You were about to say something, Andrew?
Yeah, I just wanted to, what Victor was saying reminded me of probably my favorite part of reporting this series, talking about, appreciating the privilege of being American. That came home to me in a really sort of moving way when I was at reporting episode 5, which was on the swearing in ceremony. It's when new citizens go before a special, blanking on the word, it's a function of the federal court, a special session of court, and they take their oath of citizenship, and at that moment they become citizens. It's actually, that's when it becomes formal, even though all of them have already passed their test and been told that they'll become citizens. That's kind of the magic moment. The one I went to was in Stanton at the Frontier Culture Museum. There were 80 people from 30 different countries that became Americans that day, and it was really just, it was fun. It was really fun to be there, and I didn't expect that. Over the years that I've been reporting, I've been to countless sort of public functions that are formal things that government is doing, whether it's a court, whether it's city council, whatever. And they're usually not that fun. They can be important, but they're not fun. And this was, I just felt happy to be there. And it was a celebration of all the very positive aspects about our country and our society that Victor was referring to, the things that make us strong. And this was some people who were just joining that and a lot of other people who have been a part of that for a long time and were being patriotic and non-political. It was just really a expression of who we are as a society, and I thought it was really touching. I'd encourage anybody to go to a swearing-in ceremony. It's a great experience.
We're talking about becoming American, which means we're talking about U.S. citizenship. If you place a value on that, if you have thoughts about it, if you have thoughts about people who are struggling to become U.S. citizens, we'll give out the phone number during the break, and we'll be back in about a minute. Once a refugee from Ukraine, Victor Sokolok is himself a naturalized U.S. citizen. Today he serves as director of Virginia Immigration Services for the Church World Service. Also with us, Elizabeth Gervin, executive director of the nonprofit Learning, Literacy, and Citizenship Preparation Agency, Skyline Literacy. And Andrew Jenner, who spent some years as a full-time reporter for a couple of different daily newspapers in the Valley before branching out on his own. Today he writes as a freelancer for a number of national publications. He only recently added radio to his repertoire, the 6-part series Becoming American that aired on WMRA over the past several weeks was Andrew's creation, and we want to play right now a little bit for you of part four of that series.
I am a little nervous because when somebody asks question, sometimes I don't understand some words.
Speaking 2 days before the test, Correa switched to Spanish to describe her ambitions.
Siempre tenemos metas, cosas que queremos lograr.
We always have goals, things that we want to achieve, and maybe with being citizens we can have better opportunities. That's what I think I would want to have, better opportunities and benefits for my family.
Nervousness on the big day is entirely normal, says Kim Zanotti, director of the Citizenship and Immigration Services Washington Field Office.
My officers are constantly being advised and instructed that they need to make sure that they are putting the applicants at ease because so many of them can be a little bit fearful of that test portion.
After coming to the United States from Mexico more than 20 years ago, Correa spent 2 years in the U.S. without legal documents. But her husband was a legal permanent resident, and he applied on her behalf for legal status. Before that became official, though, a frightening letter arrived, threatening her with deportation. An attorney helped her sort it out, and she received a green card without having to leave the country. For years afterwards, though, she was haunted by fears that it might happen again.
It's difficult to live with something like that because you're always afraid you're going to be deported.
On that day in Fairfax in late September, Correa had her chance to put that behind her for good. An officer summoned Correa from the waiting room. She followed, raised her right hand, swore to tell the whole truth, and then it began.
From part four of the WMRA news series, Becoming American, the narrator is in studio with us. He's also the reporter, the author, the researcher on that series. Andrew Jenner, you want to skip to the end of what happens in that story?
It was good. It turned out to be a good story. She passed, and I haven't heard. It's possible that she's already been assigned her date to go to the swearing-in ceremony. But, once she takes her oath of citizenship, she will be an American citizen. That was a fun one to report because when, the first interviews that we just heard there on the clip were done, she hadn't taken the test yet, and she was definitely nervous, I could tell. And I was nervous when I called the next day I was nervous whether she had passed or not, and it was going to kind of affect the tone of the story. I was going to do it regardless, but I was very glad to hear that she passed. I found out actually that I think a very high percentage of people do pass on their first attempt. I think there is a retake as well that's available, and I believe that 90% of applicants, I don't recall if that's the cumulative total or if that's on the first pass, but people take it seriously, and they, even though they're nervous, they do well. So
it's actually about 94% of people who pass the test the first time through, and that includes the civics test and then, of course, an English writing and reading test. And then the interview, which is the portion that most people don't pass because many people like Ophelia in that clip are still struggling with English. And it just reminds me of the people that we work with, who we've been working with for years. I mean, it takes more than 6 years, 6 to 8 years to really be able to learn English. And especially for our adults who are parents, they're raising a family, they're working one or two jobs, they're really struggling with a lot of other obstacles. So it's really challenging for them to be able to continue to improve their English and also study for the citizenship test. So it's a real accomplishment for them. And you can imagine that's why some of them are nervous, because English is a challenge, but their commitment to it is just remarkable.
You know, when I called her back the day after that she took her test, she answered the phone and she was just kind of chatting. And I kept asking, I said, did you pass? Did you pass? And it was till the very end of our conversation. Mm-hmm. We went through and she said, yeah, we can meet again. Let's do another interview. We'll meet at Skyline. And then finally, at the very end of the call, I was still sort of on pins and needles trying to figure out what was going to happen with my story. And then she said, oh, yeah, I passed. And she is very, very nonchalant about it, but I know she was very happy. So.
Well, to you on the other side of your radio, how much do you know about what it takes for an immigrant to become a U.S. citizen? got questions about that, a story to share. By phone, we're at 888-WMRA-TALK. In all numbers, that's 888-967-2825. Or if you prefer to type instead of talk, you can post to us on Facebook, where we are listed as WMRA's Virginia Insight. Elizabeth Gervin, you were born in the U.S., but this whole phenomenon of struggling with learning, of becoming literate, becoming better educated, is quite personal for you.
Well, I guess that's why I really do have a heart for literacy, because I always say I did a lot of things backwards in my life. And, you know, I dropped out of high school when I was in the 11th grade and had some health issues, got married very young, had children. And by the time I was 20, I found myself with two young children, a husband who was out at sea most of the time because he was in the military. And I was actually working for a restaurant ironing tablecloths for 25 cents a piece. And I just looked at my young boys and I said, I just cannot leave them this legacy. I really want to do something, you know, different with my life. And so I began a journey of just trying to get my GED even then, and had an interesting experience. And then from there was able to go back to school with four young children and really, you know, facing the struggle of not having much money. But I think about that and I still feel like I still had massive opportunities compared to some of the people that we work with. So, of course, I spoke English and I had some support from family. And I guess also, you know, the fact that we work with people who are still struggling with not just the fact that they don't know English, but also the fact that they might not even be literate in their own language. So that adds a whole other layer to it. So I think of the fact that, yeah, it's difficult. It's difficult to do it as an adult. But I really applaud the people that we work with because their commitment to it is just, it's really inspiring. And I think that's what keeps our tutors going as well. Andrew mentioned about going to the oath ceremony. I always suggest somebody to do that. And when you do, one of the judges that is there is notorious for asking some of the newly naturalized citizens to stand up and share a part of their journey. And he's relentless. He doesn't quit until somebody does it. Somebody has to stand up and share. And a couple years ago, this one lady stood up. Her name was Rose. And a Skyline learner who started at Skyline even before I got to Skyline. So she was there about 2006. Just had gotten here with, she said, two children and one suitcase, no English at all, and just began that journey of learning English slowly and surely and had so many bumps along the way, just had to really struggle, had two more children, and then eventually she was able to start studying for citizenship, and it was a six-year journey for her. And she stood up at that oath ceremony, and she talked about that. And to me, that was just such an inspiring moment. I was there. And just to hear Rose say, thank you so much to my tutors for being with me and helping me along this journey. I wouldn't be here today without you. So that's something that I think helps volunteers. You know, Skyline uses all volunteer tutors. So for our volunteer tutors to be able to witness that and hear that, It's really life-changing for them as well. It's such a rewarding experience.
Elizabeth, you've been with Skyline Literacy for almost 7 years now. I think you've been director for about 3 years. Mm-hmm. So you're working with people in the midst of these kinds of circumstances on a day-by-day basis. I don't know how much you're even aware yet of the difference between what your philosophy likely is and your understanding is and what the average person listening might have. But I'm wondering if you can speak to the average person listening about what most of us don't understand, don't know, that it might be good for us to know about what people go through if they want to become an American citizen.
I think what people need to understand is, first of all, the challenges of learning a foreign language with very limited time and resources. adult education across the board, whether it's somebody like me who's just trying to get a GED and go back to college, you know, across the board for adults is challenging. But then you add the layer of somebody who doesn't know the language, somebody who maybe has maybe some types of learning disabilities, somebody who's not literate in their own language. That presents just unbelievable obstacles. You're also talking about people who maybe have limited resources. So I think people have to realize that it is a very challenging task to come to a new country, to figure out the lay of the land, understand how things work, and then also learn a language that is very difficult to learn, and do it in maybe 4 hours a week. We tell our tutors that if they can volunteer for 2 hours a week, that's about 2 weeks out of the whole year. That's not much time. So any way that we can encourage our learners to make a commitment to improving their English and attending a citizenship class, and any way that we as, volunteers and as an organization can help them in that process and help them overcome the obstacles. I just think people have to remember it's challenging, and but there are ways to help. So I think that's something to keep in mind.
Victor Sokolok, you are a refugee, now a naturalized U.S. citizen. And in your work with Church World Service, you have run programs helping refugees and run programs helping immigrants. Not everybody understands the difference until we think about it a little bit. So walk us through.
Yeah, not everyone who speaks with accent is an immigrant, and not everyone is the refugee also. The immigration and refugee process are absolutely two different branches.
I think I heard you say something once about the difference between body and mind, and which is a refugee and which is an immigrant. Could you?
The immigrants, when they come to, let's say, to the United States or to any other country, when they go, person or people, they plan their route. They plan their journey. They make certain accommodations, preparations for their new journey. So these individuals, their mind goes first. The refugees, they go wherever they are sent, wherever the resources have been found, or wherever the community acceptable or receptive community is available for them. So they come first without any planning. Once they get there, that's when they settle down and they start thinking about, okay, well, now I'm here. What's next? So that's when the mind starts kicking in.
So for a refugee, the body comes first.
The body goes first and mind follows.
And for an immigrant?
The mind goes first and body follows.
One of the things that was really interesting to me reporting this whole thing was to think about it in the context of all the journalism work that I do. At the same time I was beginning this in August, national news is being dominated by Ferguson, where there is a lot of unrest, and police brutality was something that people were talking about, police tactics. And then right here in Harrisonburg, our police department had applied to the city council for approval to they got a new military vehicle through the Department of Defense. And I was writing about this on my blog, feeling a little bit depressed, I guess, personally as a citizen about this, what our society was coming to. News in general, often you always constantly hear the lament when you're a journalist why are you guys always reporting the bad news? We need to hear some good news. And so I'm sort of on the delivering end often of things that are bad news or bummers. And I think that's very important. I'm proud of my participation in that because that is a really important role that media plays in our society. But the thing that I loved about doing this series was that it's important to keep balance. And this kept pulling me back to the positive side. So the very same week that I was writing about, this thing that's of concern to a lot of people, the sort of equipment and tactics that our police may be using to control our population or keep us safe. The very same time, I'm interviewing these people who have come from places of much more difficulty than most of us experience here. And they are just truly grateful to be living here in the States, but specifically in Harrisonburg. And it was a very good reminder for me, something I really tried to take to heart and just cultivate an appreciation for and to hold with me going forward as I continue reporting here. There are things that need to be questioned and critiqued, and there are things that need to be celebrated, and I look forward to continuing doing both, and I'm glad this series gave me the opportunity to get on the good side for a while.
Our guests have been Elizabeth Gervin, Executive Director of the Literacy, Adult Education, and Citizen Preparation Agency, Skyline Literacy; Victor Sokoluk, Director of Virginia Immigration Services for Church World Service, plus freelance journalist and creator of the series Becoming American that recently aired on WMRA, Andrew Jenner. Thank you all so much for making time for us. Podcasts of this program are available on the Virginia Insight tab at WMRA.org. When you get to the page for today's broadcast, you will see links to more information about our guests, as well as links to each of the reports in the Becoming American series. Thanks for tuning in for this edition. I'm Tom Graham. Hope we can get together again soon for more insight.